Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. Today we have our guest, Chris Zitzman, with Christ in Action. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, Preston. How about you today?
Real well. It's a pleasure to have you on the show and find out more about Christ in Action and help our listeners get better informed on what you guys do and how possibly they can get involved also. So can you give us a brief history of how you got involved with Christ in Action and then what you've been doing with them and a little bit about Christ in Action and how it works?
Yeah, well, Christ in Action has been around since 1982, and we were founded by Dr. Denny Nisley and his wife, Sandy, and they still serve today as our executive directors. And we started out as a street ministry, and we would train and equip churches on how do you talk about your faith and what do you say, and we would train them in that and then take them out on the streets and get to practice and tell people about our faith in Jesus. And so over the years, those outreaches grew, and the number of volunteers grew, and these outreaches were several days or a week at a time, and so we were feeding people, you know, as they were joining us on these events, and realized that even though we were partnered with some great local churches with some kitchen facilities, that those facilities we were outgrowing them, and so we built a mobile kitchen so that we could increase our feeding capacity, and over the years realized that there were some great opportunities in disaster relief to cook and serve and feed people that had just lost everything in disaster, and use that as an opportunity to talk about our faith and hope that we have. And that's our mission, is bringing hope to America's families. And so I heard about Christ in Action in 2009, when the church I was attending partnered with Christ in Action to host a faith-based first responders training. And that's one of the other things that we do, Preston, is we train and equip on not only crisis intervention, but also on preparedness. And so we partnered with Christ in Action to train our people on how do you talk to somebody in a crisis? And so out of that, that's where I became involved with Christ in Action. And I ended up later leaving my job. I was a full-time acoustics and technology consultant, and I became a full-time missionary with Christ in Action. And that's been a great, great ride.
That's awesome when the Lord leads you in a way like that, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's not always easy, and it's a little scary at times, but it's okay, you know. It's a faith walk, and we're pleased. We have five full-time staff families that are all missionaries to America, so it includes our founders and executive directors, and we're a bit of a unique animal in that none of our staff get paid through the general operating fund or through disaster relief funds. So that way, the monies that come in for disaster relief and for our operating costs, 100% of that goes to boots on the ground and to keep the lights on and the wheels turning. It doesn't go to pay people. And so our staff and myself included, we raise missionary support, and that's how we do this full time.
Wow, that's amazing. It's tough to live on donations like that, isn't it?
It is, and you know, it's hard to always see what the next step is. But you know what, God is faithful, and we've just watched Him do some amazing things over the years, especially with regards to, you know, providing for our team as they out in faith and really leave it all behind to do these things that God's called them to.
Yes. Yeah, I feel called to do what I'm doing too, because, you know, there's times when I think, somebody else can do this. But I just can't pull away from it. So
right.
It's one of those things that when you have that calling, you know that that's where you're supposed to be, right?
That's right. And you get confirmation time after time. And, you know, you look back on those times because it's not easy. And, you know, you look back and say, you know what? No, I know that God called me to this. And so that can be, you know, one of those things that it can be challenging, but it's also very fulfilling.
Yes. Yes, it is. Now, I have to admit on full disclosure here, I attended your guys' disaster preparedness seminar back in October in Stafford, Virginia, and it was quite enlightening, and I recommend it highly. Now, that's not just the only course you guys have. You have more, I'm sure. And can you give us a little breakdown of the different courses you have and just a little bit about each one so that our listeners can understand what your programs are?
Absolutely. So the core of our training program is crisis intervention. And it's pretty much what you would think of as chaplaincy. And so we have three levels of crisis intervention training. The first level is called Assisting Individuals in Crisis. And this course is it's for everybody. Whether you feel like you're supposed to be, you know, in disaster relief or not, because we all know somebody that's going through a crisis. And so we've taken this course. It's through the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation, the ICISF. And they write the global standard for chaplaincy training all across the world. And so we took their course and we added a faith-based perspective to it. And so this is college-level training taught by one of their approved instructors, who is also a born-again Christian. Mm-hmm. And it's taking these psychological principles and just painting them in the context of, you know, a crisis, people in crisis. And you might think, well, I'm never going to go on a disaster site. But how many of the people that we know, either at work or at school or in our own families, that are going through something, whether it's a disease that they're battling or somebody that just lost a loved one, a family member or a coworker that is going through a divorce, you know, marriage struggles, these are all crises. And so we want to teach you, how do you minister to somebody like that? What do you say to them? What are some things that you need to be looking for? And how do you then also look at yourself and say, where do I need to grow? What are some areas that I can grow stronger in? And so it's a training that we believe is for everyone. It's a two-day training. Actually, all levels 1, 2, and 3, they're all two-day training. And we get to teach that as the basic level 1 course. So that's level 1 called Assisting Individuals in Crisis.
Now these
After
are
you take, yeah.
These are taught not just at your office in Culpeper, Virginia, but all around the country, correct?
Absolutely. So whenever we do trainings, Preston, we always partner with local churches. And so that goes for our disaster relief deployments as well. So whatever we're doing, we are partnering with the local church. We believe in what the local church does, and we realize that we are not a local church. We come alongside of local churches to give not just the training, but also outreach and volunteer opportunities so that, you know, some churches feel really, you know, called to be more involved in their communities and outreach and disaster relief. And so we can provide those opportunities without them having to recreate the wheel. And so training is one of those. And so we do. We not only deploy all over this great country, but we also provide these training opportunities all over the country as well. So that's level 1, Assisting Individuals in Crisis. Level 2 is called Pastoral Crisis Intervention. This is another course that's written by the ICIFF, and this is not just for pastors, despite what the title says. What it is it's taking what you learned in level one and building on it. And it takes not just the principles of crisis intervention, but it takes some pastoral care principles and kind of blends them together. And you work through some more complicated scenarios. There's some group aspects to what we teach, whereas it's a little more complex than just the one-on-one individual situations. And we take that and we teach you how do you take this to the next level. And pastoral crisis intervention, it is also for everybody. But you do need to have level one before you take our level two.
Right.
And we have one of those that's going to be coming up in Pennsylvania in August. You know, actually, all of our courses that we have coming up are on our website, and you can visit that with the course descriptions and the dates and locations. And that website is ChristInAction.com.
Now, it sounds like you have a training program that essentially helps individual Christians become better Christians. Their walk is strengthened and goes deeper, and their relationship with Christ is improved.
These trainings, they are intended to just give us some more tools in our toolbox, because I've had pastors come up to me after this training and say, you know, why didn't I get this kind of training in Bible school? These poor guys and gals that are trying to lead our churches, and you know, probably the number one conversation that they have with people is because they're going through something,
right?
And they don't have all the tools that they need. And so there's a big opportunity here where, you know, I think sometimes we in our churches, we look to our pastors a little too much. You know, Jesus gave us all the Great Commission to make disciples and to go into all the world. And so, you know, we need to be the ones that are also reaching out to those that are in crisis.
Yes, you're right.
You know, I've also had professional counselors come up after these trainings, and they say, you know, I got more out of these 2 days practical training than I did in my graduate school.
Awesome.
And you know, it's just I know that these are valuable things that anybody can do. You don't need a graduate degree to talk to somebody that's in crisis. And so that's what we want to do, is train and equip the whole body of Christ on how to do that. And so levels one and two, those are for everybody. If you're interested in becoming a chaplain, we launched a chaplain commissioning program where if you go through the training and there is an application process, you know, you could become a commissioned chaplain through Christ in Action. And the last level of training is called Chaplain's Basic Training. And so this course is for those that want to learn what does a chaplain do and what are some of the ways that they could fill that role and what are some of the legalities, the fundamentals that you need to be aware of in stepping into a chaplain's role. And that, again, that's our level three, so you do have to go in order, 1, 2, 3. And after that, you're eligible to apply to become commissioned as a CIA chaplain. And we've commissioned a badge, you know, looks like a police badge. And we have a core of amazing chaplains all over this country that they serve in various roles in their communities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them are serving in schools, some in hospitals, some run with the emergency services. We have one of our chaplains in Mobile, Alabama. He leads the critical incident stress management team. It's their chaplain's corps. And they carry police radios, and when there's a certain type of call or when they are needed and called upon, they'll dispatch a chaplain to the scene so that they can be ministering to these people that are trying to deal with, you know, it could have been a death, could have been a fire, could have been a car accident. And what an amazing way to bring hope.
Yes, yes. Now, while you were describing these courses, I was thinking there's a lot of smaller churches out there that don't have the resources to put together a program like this themselves. If they plugged in
right.
their leaders who wanted to advance, this would be a great way for smaller churches to expand their services to their members.
Absolutely. And I'll also, those are, I just talked about our crisis intervention trainings. We also saw the need to develop a one-day preparedness seminar. And that's the course that you attended, Preston. And the idea was that we saw the need for churches to open their eyes to another ministry field right in their backyards. And so we're talking about when something happens locally. You know, I was at a pastor's conference in West Virginia, and I was talking about this training and the need for it. And one of the pastors there, he said, you know what, you're absolutely right. We need this training. He said, a couple months ago, we had an ice storm, and we lost power for 5 days. And he said, you know, I didn't realize until after it was all over that I was so busy trying to save everything in my freezer that I didn't even check on any of the people in my church. He said, I didn't even reach out to my neighbor.
Wow.
And see if they were okay. He said, this is something that we need.
Mm-hmm.
And another great example is a couple years ago, we in Northern Virginia, we had 33 inches of snow from a winter storm. And I know the Midwest was about to get pounded with another snowstorm. But, you know, in where I grew up in Ohio, 33 inches of snow is just a dusting. But this close to Washington, D.C., they literally shut down the federal government.
That was Snowmageddon in 2009 or 2010, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, and so we were, Christ in Action was on call with three different counties for four-wheel drive transportation for doctors and nurses that needed to get back and forth from the hospital. We were on call for shoveling out elderly folks that needed to get to medical appointments, like dialysis appointments and things like that. I ended up running out a prescription medication out to an HIV patient in a rural part of the county who just couldn't get out to get the medication that they needed. And at that point, my daughter was 2 weeks old.
Hmm.
And, you know, I was at home trying to keep up with two kids now. And, you know, I had to make sure that our generator was ready to go.
Right.
In case we lost power, I had to make sure we had enough food and water in case, you know, something were to happen. And I was responsible for coordinating this relief effort. You connect the dots in all the areas, the requests that we got. We served a 700 square mile radius or 700 square mile area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I hadn't have had my household prepared, I wouldn't have been able to leave my 2-week-old daughter. And so if we can prepare our homes, then we can be in a position to be ready to reach out to our neighbors and in our communities when things happen.
You're right.
And so this isn't your typical, when we train this disaster preparedness seminar, this is not, we're not training you on how to, you know, just hunker down in your bunker and, you know, make sure you've got everything you need just so that you can survive. This is so that we can be in the best position possible to reach out to our neighbors and to our community.
Yes.
And to bring hope to those that need it.
Yeah, that's how
so it's very unique.
Yes. That's how I see things too. I see, you know, first you gotta work on getting your family prepared, but don't just stop everything and prepare yourself, but you reach out to your neighbors, because it's home, neighborhood, families, neighborhood, and community. It's building blocks.
That's
like
right.
That. When your neighborhood, when your home is better prepared for emergencies, then you're a stronger neighbor. When your neighborhood is better prepared for emergencies, you're a stronger neighborhood to the other neighborhoods. And people say, well, there's areas that they're not as well to do as this neighborhood or that neighborhood. Well, if these other neighborhoods are better prepared and ready, then they can help meet the needs of the underserved. And so it's a building process, and it's the way it used to be. There used to be this community effort. There was a book written years ago that, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, no, not actually. It takes a neighborhood to raise a child. And it used to be the neighborhood made sure that the kids in the neighborhood, acted right, because otherwise they'd be,
right.
they'd be, squealed on to their parents. So, and it's a building block. When I first got focused on doing this stuff, it was all about trying to figure out what would happen if I went as a federal employee to a secret location up in the Virginia mountains with my special access pass in case something happened in D.C. I had just gotten married. And I came home, told my new wife, I said, hey, babe, look at this. I get to go to continue operations up in the mountains of Virginia should something happen in D.C. Well, she was working in D.C. at the same time, too. And she goes, well, what about me? And I go, oh, crap. I hadn't thought about that. So I said, well, you'll go with me. And if they don't let you in, then I'm not going in either. So good thing we didn't have an emergency. We didn't have to test that. But what I did is I started looking around for what would happen to the average Joe and Jane Doe who didn't have that special access card to a secret location that, was built by the government, and there's a lot of them around, especially around this part of the country. And so the more I researched, the more I realized that we had to go back to some type of civil defense, not the old style, because it was all bunkers and government ran. What we needed was something that government didn't have their fingers in, something that they couldn't shut down, because that's what happened the last time. They shut it down because they didn't want to put any money in it. They want to put all the money in keeping them safe, continuity of government. So one of the things that I found was the value of Christian-based organizations such as yours. And it's good to have these organizations available. I know I interrupted your progression of your various courses, but your disaster preparedness seminar is just kind of the first in getting the family prepared for such an emergency, correct?
It's true, and that's really the approach that we take, the one that you just outlined. We start with the family unit, the household, and what are the things that you need to do in your house. And once the house is prepared, then we focus on the church unit or the organization that's there locally. Some churches have a building facility that they own, and others don't. And that's okay. They're still... whether you're a large church or small church, multi-site or single site, there's something that you can bring to the table in the event of a crisis. And so we go through specifics. What are some specific practical things that you can offer to your community? And once you've established to put a plan together, then the third piece is, how do you integrate that into the community? Who are the people that are in some of these positions in the local governments and emergency services that you need to build relationships with now so that when something happens, they know that you're there to help them, and they know what you can bring to the table.
Yes,
and
that's important.
You do that, all of a sudden...
The pre-disaster coordination and networking is important. I've ran into a problem at my former church that they didn't want to hear about it, and that's unfortunate. There are some churches that don't have any space for preparedness, and Pastor Carl Gallup's book, "Be Thou Prepared." It's all about the Christian perspective on preparedness. His introduction is fantastic as far as lining out the reasons why there's a biblical perspective on being prepared, and it's fantastic. Matter of fact, I hope to have an opportunity to speak with him sometime soon. But there's a need, and the church, in order to fill the Great Commission of reaching people spiritually, you have to help them with their physical need, and that's one of the missions that Christ in Action fulfills, correct?
Absolutely, and you know, you think back and you read through the Gospels and you look at Jesus' model of ministry when he was here, you know, the woman at the well, feeding the 5,000, Sermon on the Mount, things like that, and you see that that's what Jesus did. He met their physical needs.
Right.
And then he used that to illustrate and to reach deeper into their emotional and spiritual needs. And so, you know, while, you know, Christ in Action does training and does disaster relief, it's just so that we can get in front of people and get to share with them and get to, we're not going to beat them over the head with the Bible. That's one of the things we train how to do this in an appropriate way for someone who's really struggling, going through something. There's a good way to do that. And we want to teach and equip the body of Christ how to reach people in crisis.
Yes. And this is domestic missions.
It is. It is. We get volunteers that come when we deploy, and this is their first short-term missions experience. And it's one of the things that changes their life. And it's so great to watch God change people's hearts and change their perspective. Because you can look at pictures and watch videos and see it on the news, but it is dynamically different to walk onto a site, to hear the sounds and smell the smells and see the faces and hug these people that are going through it. And so, one of the things that we want to do is to provide opportunities for anybody to come and serve and experience this help and this hope that we can bring. We don't have a lot of requirements to come and volunteer with us. Christ in Action, the only requirements are that you are 18 or older, just because these are hazardous locations. And just willing to work and willing to serve. And you do not have to go through our training to deploy with us, volunteer with us. And so we look forward to, continuing to grow our volunteer network. The Faith-Based First Responders Network was actually birthed out of Hurricane Katrina.
Uh-huh.
Even before Katrina, Christ in Action was set up on the Pentagon parking lot at 9/11.
Wow.
And we were responsible for the feeding of the recovery workers. My wife, Bethany, actually, she's been doing this longer than I have, and she was in charge of breakfast on the Pentagon parking lot, and she was responsible for 5,000 breakfasts hot and ready to eat by 9 a.m. every morning. And so that was quite the ordeal after they finished up at the Pentagon. They served 45,000 meals on the Pentagon parking lot, and then at Ground Zero did another double that and fed those that were working at Ground Zero. And, out of that, we were ending up working at Katrina. We were told by FEMA after the fact that Christ in Action had the largest single feeding and distribution site on the Gulf Coast after Katrina. And during our deployment there, we did get a visit from President George W. Bush, and we got to spend some time there. After Katrina, Christ in Action contributed to the lessons learned report that President Bush commissioned, because there was quite the upset with people were upset with FEMA and with the government.
A lot of changes came about after that.
A lot of finger pointing, and so the president wanted to figure out what happened and how they could make it better. And so Christ in Action, being one of the faith-based organizations that worked with the government, contributed to that report. And afterward, the White House called Christ in Action and said, asked us to put together this network. It would be a loose-knit coalition of faith-based individuals and faith-based organizations that would be willing to respond in times of disaster. And so we, the Faith-Based First Responders Network was birthed out of that. And we've grown and just seen God do some amazing things. We launched our training program because we saw the need for people to be equipped and to learn how to say the right thing. And sometimes, you know, we want to be helpful, but we just don't know what to say. And so we either might end up saying the wrong thing, or we might avoid those people. And then that's how people, you know, feel lonely and alone, and they end up leaving the church because, well, nobody cares about me. Well, that's not the truth. But if we can learn how to be effective and what to say, you know, we can be the bearers of hope.
So, can you tell us a little bit about some of the more recent things? You talked about Katrina, which I was reading some things this morning that there's still FEMA is still working in New Orleans area for Katrina response. I mean, what is it? Almost 15 years later, it's that was devastating. But there's been a lot of devastation since then, especially along the Carolinas and the islands of Puerto Rico and St. Thomas and you know, like that. So, do you guys respond to them as well?
We do, and as I mentioned earlier, we go and deploy when the local response capabilities are overwhelmed. And so probably the best, most recent examples of that would be Hurricanes Florence and Hurricane Michael. And so you may know, remember that Hurricane Florence slammed into the Carolina coast and just slowed to a stop. And the storm dumped 20 to 30 inches of rain and over the Carolinas, and the it stalled out really, but it just dropped all this water, and there were many, many areas that were affected by this flooding. It was not so much wind damage, it was mostly flood water damage. And so Christ in Action, we assessed down in the Carolinas, and we ended up deploying to New Bern, North Carolina. And while we were there, the water just, you know, as water does, it goes downstream and ended up causing some additional flooding in South Carolina. And so while we were still in North Carolina, we ended up opening up another location where we deployed resources to Conway, South Carolina. And while we were in those locations working and helping families, Hurricane Michael came and ended up making landfall in Florida. And this storm, very different from Florence. Hurricane Michael, it came in with a vengeance and a wind speed and a storm speed that just ripped trees out of the ground, twisted them like we've never seen, and mostly wind damage, not a lot of water damage. And while we were still in the Carolinas, we have a base of operations in Mobile, Alabama, And that team went and deployed, helped families, served about 46 families while we were in the Carolinas. So we had three simultaneous deployments going at the same time. And it ended up being 2.5 months for us in the Carolinas. And then after Thanksgiving, our national team went down and set up in Panama City, Florida, to continue work in that region from Hurricane Michael. And so 2.5 months later, we were finally wrapped up. And by that time, between Hurricanes Michael and Florence, we had 425 volunteers from 20 different states. And we served together. We served 348 families. Mm. In these three different locations. Mm. And we logged volunteer hours. We logged over 26,000 volunteer hours. And this effort, it was huge, and it was a great testimony of all these churches and people that came from all over the country to impact thousands of lives.
Yes.
And right now, as you and I are talking, we have some of our staff and some of our chaplains in these other offices here that are making follow-up calls to each family that we helped from Hurricane Michael, because today marks 6 months since Hurricane Michael made landfall.
Oh, wow.
I didn't realize
that.
So that's one of the things that we do in order to just let people know that they are loved, that they're not forgotten. You know, we're just getting reports now of families from North Carolina now getting back into their homes.
Oh, that's good.
It's been more than 6 months for
them. Yeah, yeah. Especially if they left before the storm arrived. That's maybe a week or so more, you know.
But, right. And so we are, when we come across needs that they have, you know, we'll connect them with local resources. If they don't have a church home, we want to plug them into a local church and pray for them, whatever it is that they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
When we did the follow-up calls for Hurricane Florence a couple weeks ago, we came across the needs for household items, for furniture and appliances.
Mm.
And it turns out that's just something that is they're short on down there. And so we are just launched a furniture drive to collect furniture and things. People can drop them off here at our headquarters in Culpeper, Virginia. And we're going to fill a semi-truck and take it down to help these families that need these things.
That's great.
So it's just another great opportunity to minister to those who have suffered loss. And to let them know that they're not forgotten.
Yeah. So, Chris, in the last couple minutes here, can you give us information on how somebody can plug in with Christ in Action and get this training and where they might go to do that?
Yeah. Great. A couple ways to do it. First, go to our website, christinaction.com, and on there you're going to see a volunteer button. That just lets us know that you're interested. And when we have a volunteer opportunity, when we have a training, anything like that, we'll just send you an email and we'll let you know what's going on. We're not going to spam you. If you want to know about these opportunities, that's the best way to do it. And, you'll also see on there a list of the upcoming trainings. If there's one that, you can make, please register on our website for that training. And, we need to see you there. The other way that you can, get involved is to, if you've got your mobile phone, you can text CIA Hope to the number 444-999. So you would text a message and text CIA Hope, no spaces, and text that to 444-999, and that will get you, you know, when we make announcements about deployments or about trainings, we'll send you a text. That's another easy way to get involved. If you're in the Northern Virginia Avenue or area, we would love to see you and to get you connected. We have, you know, we're in the middle of a office renovations for our new headquarters facility, and that we need some help with that, and always having some local opportunities for work days and helping the office. So again, the best way is to start at our website, christinaction.com.
Great. Well, Chris, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. It I know I've learned some great things about Christ in Action, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. Thank you for being our guest, and may God bless you and your activities and Christ in Action, and those people
Thank
who
you.
Are still hurting out there from past disasters.
Thank you so much. And also check out our social media, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And on our website, there's also photos and videos, testimonies, stories of people that we've been able to help even from these recent storms, and then going all the way back, you know, to some of the early days. So please help yourself to those and see what God's doing in and through Christ in Action, and then come, let's be a part of it.
All right. That's a great way to finish off the show. Well, Chris, thanks again. And to my listeners, I really appreciate you being there and listening to our shows. And I just ask that you be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless. Until next time. Thank you.